iron in 4 years. I mean,
ready when you guys are.
Okay. Yeah, we don't want to use all our good stuff.
Welcome to Noise and Notes, WFPL's political podcast. I'm Philip Bailey, joined here today by WHS 11 political editor Joe Arnold and Time contributor Carrie Stimley. Guys, how you doing?
Great. Doing well.
Now, pummeled, beaten, throttled, routed, whatever the verb we want to use, Dick Lugar basically lost in a blowout to Richard Murdoch by 20 points in Indiana. What does that mean?
I would say the other word is stunned, and I think that also kind of sums up the thoughts of a lot of people in this area as well, because obviously as an institution, what it means is a combination of things. I think, one, there's no question that, as I put it the other night, that Tea Party earthquake that we felt in Kentucky 2 years ago had some aftershocks or maybe even some stronger rumblings in Indiana this week. But beyond that, you know, they also you can't ignore the fact that every race is also individual and has to do with Richard Lugar being, you know, in office for six terms, for being 80 years old, no offense to our octogenarians out there, and for being caught flat-footed by this, what everyone else saw coming, is this Tea Party, you know, tsunami.
It seemed that he was hit from all sides. I mean,
right.
Lugar just appeared, from our standpoint, to not take this candidacy by Murdoch seriously at first.
And given
the history of the Tea Party, you would think that an incumbent would realize, right. Hey, the Tea Party is a serious matter. This isn't 2010 we're talking about. This is 2012.
And I know that, it's been popular, I guess, in these last couple of days to sort of certainly mourn the political death of Richard Lugar. But at the same time, I mean, from the Tea Party perspective, from Richard Murdoch's, I think it's fair to say he was, in many regards, out of touch, at least politically.
Well, in that context, I think so. Some of the things that they complained about, he had across the board, you know, the residency issue, which, as Philip and I were talking, you know, it's been kind of understood for a number of years, but it was amplified in this campaign. I think the outside money is, you know, that's why
that's $4 million, I heard, was spent in this race.
That's why that's important, because it can put whatever issue they would like to amplify out there in a big way. And then that resonates with people. I think the age issue resonates, the longevity. The fact that he seems to be a compromiser with some parts of the political spectrum that the Tea Party doesn't support, and all that's a lot to overcome. And I think when you said earlier that the margin was kind of surprising in the poll last week,
I thought it was going to be 7-8 points, and then it was 20. And I'm thinking to myself, who on Richard Lugar's side was enthusiastic? Even the Mitch Daniels endorsement, I don't know if either one of you saw that, but sort of a backhanded endorsement. He said, I support Richard Lugar, for not for what he's done, but for what he will do. And we're talking about a six-term, 80-year-old guy.
Right. Well, I think that also it's a situation where voters' expectations of what they want out of the Senate is also changing. It used to be, what's the old saying about being the, you know, the saucer and the kind of the cool things I'm butchering that. I'm sorry, but
we know what you mean.
Yeah, but
no,
but
reasonable by comparison.
Yeah, exactly. But now we don't expect that. I mean,
Senate though. I mean, the Senate is supposed to be the place. It's not like the House is where that's meant for the ranker,
right.
the back and forth.
That's what I'm saying.
The Senate's where we get
our
back
expectations are changing.
Yeah,
look at the people that we're electing to the Senate right now, and on either end of the spectrum, and you have far more, you know, virulent voices out there than it used to be. Richard Lugar obviously is central casting senator. If you want to see what somebody looks like who's a senator, that would be Richard Lugar, but not anymore. Things are changing.
And that's an interesting question I have just for my own consideration is that, you know, is that really an expression of what the country wants, or is it a smaller sliver of voters because with the small turnouts? It's always interesting to read what that really means, and I think it'll be interesting to watch the general. But are the voters consciously thinking, I want the Senate to change, or is it a more generalized expression of, I don't like anything, and so I will just sort of lash out at any institution that I can? I don't know how much thought goes into that. I mean,
and the other part of that, frankly, is too, I was thinking that, and since this is a podcast, we have time just for a second to kind of broaden this thought. And this is sort of the conspiratorial part of it as far as why it was a 20-point margin. Well, you can kind of segment it out. It was, maybe it was 10 points Tea Party. Maybe it was 10 points Democrats crossing over, You know,
who wanted Luka to lose.
I don't know to what extent people vote strategically like that, you know, but I think that there's no question if you we're all in the media here, and I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I was getting for several months emails from the Democratic Party of Indiana saying, wouldn't it be great if Richard Murdoch was their candidate? I mean, really doing everything they could to bring Lugar down, because obviously they see Richard Murdoch as being far more vulnerable in a general election than Richard Lugar. So I don't know. Do people vote strategically, though? Do they cross over and take a Republican
ballot? It's hard
to
tell. I'm thinking to myself, in this race, obviously having Murdoch was better for Democrats. When I talked to Dan Parker, the chairman of the Indiana Democratic Party, he said, we don't do that. But clearly you had a number of Democrats saying publicly for, like you said, weeks and months, hey, if Richard Lugar loses, we can pick up the seat and hold off the Republicans taking back the Senate.
Yeah, I don't think anybody might have assumed that seat would be in play a year ago. And now, you know, ostensibly it's in play, you know, just because there's an unknown, you know, institution's been, you know, retired. I don't know either. You know, it's one of the quirks of Indiana registration is that, you know, you don't have to declare a party. You can go up to the polling place and just ask for a Republican primary ballot or a Democratic primary, you know, right at the moment. And so there's no way to track how many people crossed over that I know. So that also clouds that issue. I suppose that's part of it. And it just seemed like once you get that narrative plays out to the point where, you know, we got to get rid of this guy, then the tsunami came and it was crazy.
Speaking of the general election, Congressman Joe Donnelly, the Democratic candidate, he's come out early swinging against Murdoch. He's been on a number of television shows, CNN, MSNBC. We talked to him. I mean, he's making it pretty clear that his way of defeating Murdoch is going to be, I'm a centrist. I'm actually a blue dog Democrat. It's his argument. He's going to go off the Chrysler lawsuit that Murdoch filed as state treasurer. What is his chances? I mean, in the polls that I've seen have him tied with Murdoch or lead him a little bit, but that's early polling. The Tea Party could come swoop back in here and give him, Murdoch, all the aid it can.
I think it's a true battleground. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to run away with this unless the only person in this race who would run away with it, in my humble estimation, would be Murdoch. If are we underestimating the swell of the Tea Party and how strong that is? Certainly, you saw the kind of support you mentioned, $3 million, I think, alone for Murdoch from, you know, outside PAC groups and Tea Party associated outside spending coming in. Well, if they've spent that in the primary against Lugar, what are they going to spend in the general against?
Now, we do remember the Tea Party, they're really good at nominating people. I mean, Christine O'Donnell, mm-hmm. Sharon Angle. When in the general, they're hit or miss.
That's a very good point. But I'm just saying I was thinking about this too. I mean, I was thinking about, and it's, I guess, unfair to try to, you know, compare one race to the next. I keep thinking about the race that I covered the most closely over the last few years being the Rand Paul-Jack Conway race. And I think people were shocked there as well. Well, yeah, Rand Paul was able to beat Trey Grayson. Because Trey Grayson was a poor campaigner, or he just didn't speak. But then look what happened in the general. I mean, he still was able to sustain that. So I don't know. Is the Tea Party movement as strong as what Richard Murdoch says it is? And if it is in Indiana, then I think Joe Donnelly has his work cut out for him, and he'd have to be considered the underdog.
I'm surprised that Donnelly, though, said he's running as a blue dog Democrat, considering how that group of people are basically extinct from the 2010 election.
I just think that's pragmatism. I mean,
in Indiana, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in Indiana, you're not going to run as a liberal, so you have to soften it. He's a Democrat. I think that's going to work against him by labels, so he has to try to...
Because of Obama.
To mitigate that a little bit. It's interesting. I've read a little bit about that, and the National Party has said they're going to be in on that race, whereas if it had been Lugar, I don't think they'd have been in on it.
Yeah, Chuck Schumer made it pretty clear during the primaries they were counting the votes. Indiana's a toss-up.
Of course, then it gets real interesting. It's all in the realm of speculation, but, you know, one of the questions I have is, you know, how popular will... Romney be? I mean, you know, when there's a presidential election, that's going to drive turnout in a different way. I doubt that Romney's wildly popular personally, but I think there's an anti-Obama vote in Indiana, yeah. Which is interesting because 4 years ago, Indiana went for Obama very slightly in the general.
And it comes, maybe that comes down then to who's the most, you know, fired up. Which voters are the most motivated to get to the polls, that whole enthusiasm gap that we talk about. And it would stand to reason, you know, that you're looking at, you know, obviously Joe Donnelly was unopposed in his primary, so you can't quite gauge
what kind of enthusiasm you have
for people there. But on the Republican side, there's no question, when you look at that margin for Murdoch, that he's surging right now. Now, it's 6 months until the general. Who's to say what might happen between now and then? You mentioned Sharon Angle a moment ago, who certainly was marginalized in her Senate campaign 2 years ago. And And perhaps not coincidentally, the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee is already trying to draw comparisons nationally in their talking points between Sherrin Engel and Richard Murdoch. He's a fringe candidate. He's extreme. He's radical. He's out there. And look at all the love for Richard Lugar among Democrats right now. You know, yeah. He's not Richard
Lugar. He's a statesman.
Lugar.
Yeah,
exactly.
Is the governor's race in Indiana, is that completely dimmed at this point? It's between Mike Pence, the congressman, and John Gregg. Is that race now completely like afterthought? Is Pence's race really to lose?
Again, you know, we were speculating. It seemed, I mean, I would guess that it's going to be a tough road for anybody to beat somebody like Pence. Big name recognition, really solid conservative credentials.
Someone thinks it's going to be president or vice president for the Republican ticket at one point in his career.
Right, and a lot of money. The trend seems to be all his way. John Gregg was in the state legislature and was pretty well regarded, but he's been out for more than a decade, so I don't even know who remembers him.
You know, and this is, again, trying to read the minds of Hoosier voters, and I do think, and you said, is it dimmed? I think it's just, it has been dimmed because of the primary battles. Now is when we're going to start seeing that race really begin to get some more oxygen because of the fact that there's just fewer people out there. The primary... the wheat has been separated from the chaff here, and we can begin focusing on, you know, individual candidates, Republican versus Democrat, and in some cases some independents. So I think you're going to start seeing more. And frankly, I don't know. I mean, I think overall, Mitch Daniels is going to get generally high marks from Hoosiers for the last 8 years. Mitch Daniels did not come into this as an ideologue. I mean, even though he was from the George W. Bush White House, he was more
he's
of
done an excellent job of washing that.
Right, yeah.
He's done an excellent job.
But Eli Lilly, yeah. Management. Let's manage the state as opposed to...
I'm not a Republican. I'm a manager of the state.
That's right. But I'm saying, as opposed to, if you want to draw a contrast, certainly Mike Pence does not come from that kind of background. And I don't know if people are going to... Maybe they're going to have enough of the... I'm just guessing here. Enough of the rank, you know, of the rancor in the congressional races and the Senate race, maybe they say, give me somebody who's stable. Give me somebody who's going to just keep the state on the right track.
He doesn't have any ambitions outside of this.
There's no question. Mike Pence does.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already shown, as Kerry said, that he does. So maybe John Gregg is someone who's stable enough. I have no idea. Who's to say? They still have to, I think, define themselves with a lot of the
voters. I find interesting, though, is that the Democrats certainly aren't conceding. There have been instance in the past where the candidate wasn't very strong and you just knew what was going to happen. I think it may well go strong Republican, but I think it'll be an interesting contest. I think it'll be well engaged. And there's so many layers, you know, with the presidential, you know, the gubernatorial and these congressional elections that are going to be pretty hot. There's an awful lot to look at and to speculate.
It's really going
about
on over in Indiana, man, on your side of the bridge.
And to your point, though, you said the presidential. In the long run, Obama is the issue in almost every single one of these races. He'll even be the issue in the governor's race in Indiana as well. I mean, you will see, and to a lesser extent, maybe Pelosi, but Obama will be, he is the question. Do you want the next 4 years or not? And I think you'll see a sweep one way or the other.
Getting lost in the shuffle, perhaps, is the race right across the river for us in Louisville, okay, in your district, District 9, mm-hmm. The race between incumbent Republican Congressman Todd Young and Shelley Yoder, who really, like you said, in these primaries where no one was really paying attention, had somewhat of an upset, right? I mean, she beat a retired general. She beat a former aide to the Congressman Lee Hamilton, who was a congressman in that district for a long period of time. Yoder came really out of nowhere. Didn't really know who she was beforehand. I'll admit that. Is this an upset on her part? And does this really mean this is an easy gain for the Republicans again because of redistricting?
Again, well, Tough battle because of redistricting. And of course, any incumbent has the money advantage. And, you know, even though Todd Young's only, you know, finishing his first term, he's raised a lot of money. She's not going to be able. She doesn't have that kind of money right now. Be interesting to see if she can raise it. You know, even though I live in the ninth, you know, we were getting the mailers and the road roll calls. I wasn't hearing that much about it. You know, there were five candidates. I thought the three of them, you know, the general, Winningham, the former aide to Hamilton, and Yoder, you know, made a good case for themselves in the literature I saw, but really wasn't a big buzz race. I didn't know how to read that one. You know, it's interesting that I had never heard of her. You know, she's a former Miss Indiana. She works at Indiana University. She seems to be very engaged, very intelligent person, so I suspect that had a lot to do with why she won.
Sometimes having these big primaries with so many candidates, not only do you not get attention from the media, but you can get lost in the attention as far as the voters. It's like, oh, and you just end up pulling a name, and that person, whoever comes out of the hat, and now that person is run up against a pretty much of a wood chipper of a congressman in Todd Young, who's a pretty good freshman in the sense of raising money and certainly still has a lot of Tea Party support of his own and is known as a bona fide conservative.
I think the people who vote in the primaries are people who are more involved in party politics in the first place. I think that if you looked at the, first of all, the breakdown of people who pulled Republican ballots versus Democratic ballots in the ninth, it was a 2-to-1 advantage for Republicans over Democrats, which is a sign for the general in a moment here. But what that means as well is that it was a pretty small pool of people that she won from, pardon that poor grammar, and what that means, in my opinion, and the people that I spoke with on the ground in the ninth, is that she just had the best ground game personally, that in terms of she came across the best at the county Democratic dinners. She showed up with her three kids. They were really cute. She was well-spoken. She's very articulate. I spoke to her yesterday in Bloomington. I went up to the Monroe County Democratic headquarters up there and talked to her for our story on WHAS 11. Very articulate. She works at the, as you said, the Kelly School of Business at Indiana University. I think in my mind, I wasn't sure what to expect as far as former Miss Indiana. That has a whole lot of connotations for people. And to her credit, she doesn't shirk away from that, saying, hey, it gave me a lot of experience in public speaking. I got to know the entire state of Indiana, especially here in my part. And beyond that, it gave me scholarship money, so I was able to earn 2 master's degrees, get a good education, and be well-suited now to be able to move on. What she also says is she thinks that Todd Young has been more nationally focused, more on the partisan politics, and she thinks it's time for more bipartisanship, more listening, and wants to do that. It'll take, interestingly, I think it would take someone, a personality, to be able to overcome the kind of advantage you mentioned, Carrie, with fundraising. And last I checked, Todd Young had raised more than $1 million, spent some of it already, but raised more than $1 million. He didn't have a primary opponent. And Yoder had spent, we don't know how much, he's probably spent most of it, $40,000.
That's not even...
No. So, and that was about a third of what they expected it would take to win the primary in the first place.
Is this a race where she's running for something else, perhaps? Like, you know how someone...
I don't think so. I think she was somebody who 90 days ago was looking in the mirror and saying, man,
why
somebody
not me?
Why not? Exactly. And, you know, her kids are 3, 5, and 7. You know, her husband's a university professor. They don't come from a wealthy background, like some of the trust fund people who can kind of run professionally and not have to worry about that. This is a true sacrifice for her, but she's very passionate about it. But my point is that the ninth is obviously tilting Republican. It's drawn that way now. He has the money advantage. The only way perhaps Democrats have a chance there is to pull a wild card. And in that way, they may have chosen the best candidate in that, you know, because she is such an unexpected person. Who's to say? I think the first female.
There's some sizzle there.
I don't know Indiana politics as far as the past history, but has a woman ever run for Congress in the ninth?
Not that I can remember.
Obviously, you had Barron Hill, or Mike Sodrel for years running against each other. Before that, of course, it was Hamilton.
Gene Lysing ran in the Republican contest back when Mike Bailey was around, if you remember
right,
that.
Yeah.
I think she almost beat Hamilton one year.
You're right.
In 94. The big,
good memory.
The big, yeah.
Yeah.
That's scary. But so I think it's tall order, but it might make it interesting because of the wild card aspect. And I just don't know what the mood of the electorate's going to be. You know, if they've already made up their mind, you know, I'm just tired of this sort of leftish kind of bent that this country's taking. They think the country's gone left. They might not even listen to this.
And from a pure politics part of all this, the campaign stuff, not just the money that's already been raised, but, you know, so far she's not been targeted by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee to be the recipient of...
she's not one of their 25.
Right. And as a result, unless she can make it, and that will take her own fundraising. That will take... She has to prove on the ground herself that she is capable of doing that. And considering the Murdoch-Donnelly race and Donnelly siphoning off
all those Democratic... considering that the DCCC has other priority. I mean, they want to get back the House. And
that's right.
That's not one of their 25.
Exactly. You can only spend so much.
That's right. And so you have to target races that you think you can win to make that big difference. And I think she's going to
pretty much be on her own.
Yeah.
Well, guys.
If I remember right, I mean, Yarmouth couldn't even rise to that standard until maybe very late in that contest.
So you never know.
But, you know, I think, you know, I'll just add, tough to be running that race in a presidential year as opposed to an off year, because just so much more coattail effect.
Well, guys, thanks for joining us. Joe Arnold with WHAS 11 and Kerry Stimley, Time Magazine contributor. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Bill.
My pleasure.
Noise and Notes is produced by WFPL. For more information, visit WFPL.org.